I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of At The Margin. Energy prices are on everybody's mind lately since the Ukrainian conflict began. And electricity markets have come under fire at a European level with Ursula von der Leyen saying that they are no longer fit for purpose. Presumably, this comment is in reference to the fact that wholesale electricity markets operate by setting the price at the cost of the most expensive unit to generate at a given moment in time. In normal times, this guides good decision-making, but it has had the side effect in recent moments where we've seen really high electricity prices of creating windfall profits for certain firms, certain generators that are operating. So the key question is, when it comes to electricity markets, is there a way to reduce these windfall profits, maybe transfer these returns or economic rents to consumers, be it through a direct transfer, such as a lump sum transfer, or be it through bringing down prices? There are many options on the table on how to maybe solve this conundrum, but the big issue is, how do we achieve that outcome without interfering with the efficient operation of the market? One key point about electricity markets is that they're really complicated, and a good market design brings about the right generation at the right time. So this is important in the short term to make sure we have the right set of generators generating electricity, but in the longer term, it's important for things like decarbonisation. We want to have the right portfolio of wind and renewables alongside storage, alongside flexible generation that can kick in when we don't have the wind blowing. A good market decides these quantities for us. If we change the rules slightly, well, then we're opening up the possibility that we don't get quite the good mix that we would want going forward. And there are many other potential unintended consequences of changing the rules. So that's the problem, I suppose, that's faced with European decision makers right now. There's a lot of meetings going on about how do we solve this problem whilst minimising any potential negative consequences in terms of the market operation. In this episode, I'm joined by Bram Kleiss, Senior Advisor with the Regulatory Assistance Project, to discuss these various options and the various proposals that are on the table through this lens of how do we maybe perhaps minimise the possibility of unintended consequences. The Regulatory Assistance Project is an independent global NGO advancing policy innovation, and that's the perfect CV, I suppose, for somebody to discuss how do we innovate policy in a way that maybe perhaps limits any negative consequences. That group, Bram and colleagues, have reviewed potential options to solve this energy market conundrum and have put forward some proposals of their own, which we will discuss alongside some that are perhaps considered at an EU level and are in the public domain. Okay, a longer introduction than usual, but I'll leave you to our discussion with Bram. Thanks a million for agreeing to speak with me about, you know, wholesale markets, and it's something that's, you know, topical at the moment. We're seeing the rising energy prices, and there's a lot of pressure, I suppose, at a European level and at national level to try and maybe do something to try and mitigate the upward pressure that we're seeing on electricity prices. And I suppose for a lot of people who aren't familiar with how electricity markets work, it might be useful to explain how we see changes in gas prices and how this translates maybe into high energy prices in domestic markets. So I suppose the first thing to think about is we have a situation where the conflict in Ukraine has led to high gas prices, and a lot of electricity is generated by gas. But then, and then we have this wholesale market, which is sort of behind the scenes. It's where maybe generators would trade with suppliers. And the structure of the market maybe leads us to a situation where we have much higher prices than maybe just the core cost would reflect. Maybe you could help us to explain or help us to understand why wholesale markets are structured as they are.
Yeah, sure. And thanks a lot for having me. It's a very interesting and important debate for many, many people and businesses that are seeing these crazy price increases and making their life and their operation much more difficult. So it's important to understand what's going on and also to think through possible solutions, of course, or actions that can make a difference. Now, electricity is of course a specific product in the sense that electricity system operator needs to make sure that offer and demand and the generation of electricity and how much electricity is needed at any given moment is in balance. Otherwise, the electricity system gets in trouble. And so the specific challenge of making sure that every second there's enough, just enough electricity to meet demand has led to a market structure in which generators, but also other resources like demand side, flexibility, storage, trade part of their business in the longer term and another part of their business in the short term. And it all kind of comes together in real time when offer has to meet demand. Now, due to the many different sources of technologies to make electricity and also the involvement of the demand side flexibility, which is increasingly important, it's very important to make sure that all of this is happening as cost efficiently as possible, as cheap if you want, but of course that's a difficult term these days, but still as cheap as possible. And so at the end of the 90s, we in Europe started to move away from the more centralized and centrally managed price formation systems that many European countries had, and went towards a market design that really uses the markets for what they're good at, which is forcing everybody that participates in a market to come up with an honest price and making sure that the cheapest combination is used to meet a certain point in this case electricity demand. And so the way that we're doing this, and this is not unique to electricity, but it's definitely needed for electricity markets, is that you kind of make every market participant bid the marginal cost, so the minimum cost that they need to deliver a unit of energy, electricity in the market, without giving them the incentive to exaggerate. You don't want them to kind of bid up because they start speculating what others are going to do. You make them tell you as a market operator the minimum that they need. And then you rank everybody from cheapest to more expensive. And you deploy the resources that you need exactly to meet the demand up to the demand curve, where the demand curve kind of meets the all the offer options.
It's I always think of electricity markets as like, I don't play rugby in your part of the world, but a rugby team. So rugby is like sport where people always say traditionally it's where everybody can, people of all shapes and sizes, and we have generators of all shapes and sizes, and at each moment in time we want to make sure that we have those who are the best, can serve the demand, can meet the demand that we need at the right moment in time, and do it at least cost. So we have the best team basically playing at any moment in time, and we need to know truthfully what their actual cost is. And as you're saying, the current market structure allows us to identify that.
Right, exactly. And that's really important. So we'll get to gas in 2 seconds. But this whole structure makes sure that nobody has the incentive to exaggerate to their ask. Other systems that we had before in Europe did have that incentive. It relied more on kind of bilateral information exchange between regulators and market participants, and those companies, those market participants, electricity generators always know much better their own books than any regulator is ever going to be able to discover. And so there's a huge information imbalance. And that led to higher electricity prices than that was optimal. Now, under the current system, you do have that transparency and the guarantee for more cost-efficient dispatch using the different resources, the best team, as you call it, to score the goals. But then the kind of final bit is that you clear the market, that you set the electricity price at the last resource that you dispatch, and so the most expensive one in the order, in the merit order, which is the ranking from cheap to expensive of the different resources. So the last one that gets dispatched, the most expensive one that gets activated, sets the price for everybody that comes ahead of them.
Yeah, I think it's key that. That's the key thing that leads to people acting truthfully. So, like, if for example, I'm at a moment in time and I'm being asked, okay, you want to generate X units of electricity, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, the bid I place will determine my profits. I'm going to take that into account, and I'm going to find the point on the where it's best for me in terms of the trade off between, well, it's a less, if I go up my bid, it's less likely I'll get the dispatch, I'll get to sell my electricity, but if I do sell, I'll sell at a higher price. So I'm no longer in the world of just revealing truthfully. Whereas if my price is more or less decoupled from the bid or the probability of success, well, then I'm more likely to bid truthfully. And that's why this sort of system works, because I don't have this incentive to maybe increase my bid. I'm going to be truthful. And then we from these truthful bids, we can figure out what's the least cost dispatch.
Exactly. Today, of course, in many instances, the last unit that gets dispatched is a gas power plant, and gas is very expensive. And so electricity made from fossil gas, from natural gas, is very expensive. And that is the cause for the high electricity prices that we see. Now, mind you, that is not 24/7 the case. But of course, it's still important variation throughout the day and throughout the week of electricity prices. You can see that in every country, in every electricity spot market, there's going to be cheaper and more expensive hours. And that is just depending on the demand at that time, the exact mix of resources. Is there a lot of sun? We've had a very sunny summer. So traditionally, in the middle of the day, prices would go down. So you do still see the impact of changes in the electricity generation portfolio, and notably the impact of renewable energy, solar and wind, on the electricity prices. So that's important. But that being said, the high gas prices do, of course, dramatically push up the electricity prices. Especially in the winter, where we face the risk of having scarcity in Europe, and so not having enough gas.
I suppose a lot of people would be familiar with their the retail bill, and the retail bill that, like, our electricity suppliers, that's they have to buy that electricity from the market, and the price that they have varies throughout the day and throughout different months and different times of year. So as you're saying, in some periods are more affected than others by gas, by high gas prices. It's not every minute of every day, but it's whenever, it's usually maybe times where there's high demand, and then that's when gas more likely tends to kick in. And if gas prices are higher, well, then it's going to have a much more exaggerated effect.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, before we would have coal at the margin, so being the marginal producer more often than it's now definitely the case.
Yeah.
And gas would be below them. The current gas prices.
Yeah. Now, that's more in a European context. I suppose a lot of Irish people listening. In an Irish context, gas tends to be at the margin more often. But yeah, well, definitely it's almost at the margin now. But no, absolutely. It's worth bearing in mind. But so I suppose the big question then is, you know, under normal circumstances, we have a situation where the margin unit sets the price, and that guides truthful bidding, and that helps us make sure the right generators are performing at the right moment in time. In the short term, the system runs more efficiently. In the long term, it has important incentives as well, because if there's moments of high prices, well, then that sort of tells the market, well, you know what, we need this type of generation, and it guides investment in the long term. So it has these, where, you know, if we had perfect information, we could do this ourselves, but we don't know the ins and outs of different firms and different technologies. So the market helps to make up that difference for us. But now we're in a situation where the prices are much, much greater. And I suppose the argument is, well, we've exhausted all the benefits of these price signals, and now we're into a situation where maybe it's, you know, the costs, the distributional costs are perhaps exceeding the benefits. And is there something that we can do to alleviate that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I think in absolute terms, the markets are telling us a few things. First, it's very, very urgent to save energy as much as possible, and gas in particular. And so, as you know, gas is much more used for heating than for power generation. So a lot of focus is going there and should also go there. People and businesses are saving energy, but governments should support that more. And then the other signal that markets are giving us is that it's really important to switch fuels, to move away from fossil gas, hopefully not too much and only temporarily to things like coal and oil, and more towards renewables. And especially also look for resources that can fulfill the role that gas power plants are playing in the electricity system today, which is providing flexibility, being able to really quickly respond to changes in on the demand side or renewables varying throughout the day. So the high prices definitely give investment signals in that direction. Mm. But of course, the war situation that we find ourselves in also creates a very high insecurity of the near future. And so I think the effective investment signals that we're seeing only really affect significantly compared to before investments that are able to be rolled out very, very quickly, and meaning in terms of weeks and months, and have a very quick payback time. And so I think examples include, of course, solar PV on the roof, batteries in some instances. So things that you can roll out very quickly. But we're also faced at the same time with a big bottleneck in terms of the availability of the workforce, some supply chain bottlenecks. So even though it would make a lot of sense to switch from gas to a heat pump right now, it's not that easy to have that installed quickly. Sure. And so to your point, I do think that given all that, the market is still giving the right signals, but its effectiveness or the additional benefit of the price levels that we're seeing today is probably exceeding the social welfare impacts of that. And so we should really look at, and of course governments are looking at that, ways to mitigate very, very quickly the impact on households and businesses.
Yeah, but that nicely sums up, I suppose, the sort of trade-offs here in tackling this problem, because, you know, markets give us important signals, and as you say, the signal to cut back our consumption, and then as, alongside that, maybe to try and switch away from reliance on gas. Whatever this, like, these are things we should heed, basically, and any solution that comes in place, you know, we need to make sure that's we pay attention to that. Yeah, so I suppose one thing I suppose to take into account, there's loads of proposed interventions, and some that are in the public domain in relation to that are being considered at a European level, and then there are others that maybe perhaps are widely other political types of interventions, and alongside, I suppose, retaining the incentive to, like, I suppose the objective is to try and help households and make sure that we alleviate households to a certain extent. We also want to make sure that we retain to the greatest extent possible the incentive maybe to switch towards renewables to reduce our demand. But also we want to make sure we want to retain the positives of the current market design, the efficient dispatch, like what we discussed. And then another addition to that is the whole issue of unintended consequences that economists love to talk about, that if we make an intervention, we want to make sure that we minimize the chance of leaving ourselves open for something happening down the line that we didn't expect to happen, or some sort of impact on basically making it more difficult to achieve other objectives. And I suppose the first one that comes to mind in terms of that gets a lot of political discussion is that issue of a windfall tax. And in my mind, I think the windfall tax is, because electricity markets are so complex, the discussion when you brought us through there, like, it is a very complex situation. It's very difficult, in my mind, to correctly specify windfall tax that doesn't leave us open for unintended consequences. Because how do you levy the tax? How do you design that tax in such a way that you're not going to impinge on certain incentives? To my mind, is quite difficult. I don't know. Have you thought about this at all?
Yeah. Well, I would start by saying that I very much understand where the idea of windfall profit tax or revenue cap or some variation of that comes from. So we've started by explaining how the merit order and base cleared in the electricity market works, and it's leading to revenue today, which is really exceptionally high for anything but gas generators. And so I understand and support the desire to tackle that somehow, given the pain that it's causing to consumers. But it's not that easy to design a windfall profit tax, if you're talking about fiscal measures, or a revenue cap that kind of exposed intervenes in the energy markets or in the electricity markets, that doesn't interfere with the specificities of electricity, longer term contracts, hedging done by participants, and that doesn't give or that doesn't create the risk of dampening investment signals for new generation, keeping in mind that is something that we desperately need. So you're intervening on those resources, anything but gas, that you actually really want to stimulate as much as possible. So by intervening, by afterwards going in and taking some of the revenue, even though it may be excessive, that is really creating a policy risk that is of course detrimental right now. So that's problematic, and you don't really know how much the windfall profits really are. That I think that is one of the biggest problems. Sure. If you want to be fair, you really have to dig deep and get very open and transparent information and full information about cost structure people that are being exchanged in the market.
No, I 100% agree in terms of how do you specify it? How do you figure out where the tax is coming from? Like one issue is that you have a situation where like people contract forward and you don't know what price they're actually receiving. You don't know what their cost structures are. It's very difficult to actually figure out what the windfall is. Sometimes you have like energy firms with a generation arm and a supply arm, and sometimes there's cross subsidization going on. It's very difficult to identify. It's very difficult to figure out what the repercussions of setting it are. And it's especially very difficult to do in a short time frame. That's I think really is the crux. Like it's not necessarily a bad idea if you can do it right. That's the way I would look at it. But you really need time to figure out of getting it right.
There are of course windfall profit taxes in place in many countries, including my own in Belgium. We have a windfall profit tax. We call it a nuclear rent. On nuclear energy that has been written off, and there's been an ongoing and contentious and difficult attempt by government after government to make that windfall profit tax really reflect what we think is the actual windfall profit on those nuclear power plants, and that's in a situation where there's actually a give and take. Where the nuclear operator, in this case ENGIE, might be interested in extending the lifetime in return for the tax. And so even in that situation, we've seen that it's not easy to overcome the information deficit that governments are facing to impose a fair windfall profit tax.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. Okay, so the one thing that comes to my mind is that when people think about a situation where we have really high profits, and like the first thing that comes to mind is, okay, we need to tax that. But if you can intervene in the market structure in a way that achieves the same objective in terms of maybe mitigating these windfall taxes, helping alleviate prices for consumers, but perhaps in a way that's less prone to maybe some of the unintended consequences. Now, given all the stuff we discussed earlier, that's still not straightforward. We still need to make sure that we avoid the unintended consequences. We avoid, affecting the good incentives that come with a market. But maybe we'll go through some of the issues that some of the proposals that are put in place. And I know you and colleagues have put together a proposal. Maybe we'll finish on that one, but we'll go through some of the other ones before that. And I know one example is maybe say cost plus pricing, where maybe you bid in your cost and then maybe you're given maybe a portion of a profit, but it's conditional on your bid, as opposed to maybe whatever the marginal unit is. And then there's maybe a price cap or across the board price cap. I don't know if you have any thoughts on how these maybe the pros and cons of these interventions.
Yeah, I mean cost plus or average pricing, which I think is a kind of a variation on the theme, are what we exactly left behind at the end of the 90s, and because it has been shown to lead to structurally higher electricity prices, and because exactly operators have every incentive to hide as much as they can without being too blatant about it, but hide as much of the cost structure as they can, driving up their bids and getting a guaranteed rate of return from government or from the system operator. So I think in the longer run, that is not going to be interesting for consumers. And it's definitely also not a quick fix. It's a departure of the current electricity market design, and so it would take years to implement. So it's not a solution for this or next winter.
So essentially, when we had a centrally planned system where it was one perhaps government-owned utility, this was the sort of structure we had, and we moved away from that to try and maybe incentivize greater efficiency and bring down prices, but we're actually moving back towards that. And yeah, as you say, it's a huge intervention.
And I mean, I think important to realize is that it's also not answering some of the needed investments that we have to get in this energy transition. It was maybe still somewhat understandable when we had a very centralized system with big power plants connecting to the first to transmission and to distribution, top down very much, so centrally organized with a few limited number of big players, utilities that have a monopoly or an oligopoly. Today, what we need is decentralization, and that what we're seeing is decentralization and a much more active participation of the demand side. And so that is impossible in a cost-plus model.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I hadn't thought about that, but the world is moving towards like distributed generation, households, solar PV, etc. And a centralized structure is very difficult to operate in that world. And yeah, no, that's very true.
I think it's impossible. So what you're going to do is go back to a system that where the big utilities, which are of course still around, are going to be benefiting, but that we're not going to see the flexibility and also the benefits to consumers that that we would actually get under the current market design.
Yeah, and one thing as well, one of the like, okay, distributed generation, it allows households maybe to become prosumers, produce their electricity and benefit from that. But it also increases competition in the market, that you have loads of smaller generators and they're competing, and it's no longer the preserve of large firms, that you have a situation where you have smaller firms and they can maybe club together and become some sort of virtual power plant. All that sort of thing can happen. That's very difficult to facilitate under this sort of structure.
Yeah, and I mean, don't get me wrong, we definitely need those big firms as well, and because we're facing giant investments, it's not just by prosumers aggregated together that we're going to solve this whole energy transition, but a healthy mix and competition, as you say, is really key.
Okay, and then the other issue is one of a price cap, and this reminds me of the sort of conundrum that comes when we have, say, capacity markets and we talk about price caps, in that sometimes you might have a situation where at the peak moments, say 5 o'clock or 7 o'clock, when demand is really high, we need these peak generators to come on board. If there's a cap on that moment, well, they only operate maybe infrequently, and they need profits during these infrequent moments to be viable. If there's a cap, well, then maybe we won't get as much investment in these sort of situations. I imagine the price cap in the context of the current situation would maybe exaggerate that effect, or what would be your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think a across-the-board price cap would indeed risk investments, but even earlier than that would risk not being able to access and to not be able to use certain resources because they just happen to be above the price cap, and they're not going to want to be deployed. So which would then potentially lead to system failure. And that's, of course, not what we want. So a price cap across the board on electricity wholesale markets is not a good idea. You also, of course, lose the efficiency incentive. Of course, not forgetting what we just said, that we're actually realizing that we need to do something about the price shock. But it is one of the additional downsides of a price cap. So I think I don't expect that to come out of the European political discussions, a price cap on wholesale markets. What we might see is a cap on consumer prices, which is, of course, something that is already present in many countries, France, Central Eastern European countries. There's the British
Price cap system, yeah.
But so that, which comes with its own whole host of issues. And of course, I think most acutely today comes with a very big cost because there's a gap between the cap and the actual market prices, which then needs to be either paid for by governments out of their budget or paid off over a longer time by consumers. So I think even though I understand, of course, the attraction and the importance, it does seem wise to limit it only to those people that really need it if you want to implement it. So, of course, vulnerable consumers getting regulated tariffs is, I think, an example of where that might play a role.
Yeah, like I suppose there's two dimensions when it comes to retail price caps. Number one, it's costly, and secondly, it affects, I suppose, the demand response that we need. Like, we all need to be cutting back at our demand, and prices guide us in that way. And the way I look at it sometimes is, you know, every little helps when it comes to reducing demand, and the prices have guided us there. And at least when we're faced with big prices, that decision is in our hands, as long as we can afford it, as opposed to maybe if there was rationing, somebody else is making that decision for us. So that's another consideration, I suppose. Like, it still hurts people a lot to have high prices, but this is the other aspect to be taken into account. The alternative sometimes, you know, is also bad.
Exactly. I think nonetheless, I think it will be discussed to introduce some more generic or targeted price caps. In addition, of course, and which I think is actually the better option, is to provide direct financial support to consumers, not touching the energy price.
Absolutely. So I've been involved in some work on that in terms of targeting those vulnerable. People could listen to the previous episode on exactly that, but we came to the exact same conclusion in that welfare supports and the like targeted towards those who are most vulnerable are the most effective way to maybe alleviate these issues. So that's definitely something to be considered.
Can I just say one more thing about that? Because even though I do believe that is the correct way to look at it, we do of course also need to realize that targeted support or any kind of government program to help those that are vulnerable inherently or unavoidably will have inefficiencies in itself. So no government program is perfect in actually completely reaching those that actually need to be reached. I think in Belgium, which I know the best, we have a social tariff, which I think is a really great tool. But even then, you still see that an important number of families that could qualify for it don't get it for some reason. And of course, if your only tool to help those people is an instrument, and then doesn't actually reach all the people that need it, the ones that kind of fall off the boat are in a lot of trouble.
Absolutely, no, it's very true. And another thing, just when I think of it, is the Iberian model, where you have a situation of perhaps capping gas prices, and that feeds through into maybe reduced electricity prices. It does tackle the windfall profit issue, and then it does bring down prices, but I suppose these gas prices are supported by the public purse, and that's quite a costly measure. I don't know if you had any thoughts on it.
Iberian mechanism caps gas specifically for power generation. So it's the gas that goes into power plants to generate electricity. And as we've seen, they set the price for everybody. And so if you reduce that price, the wholesale clearing price goes down. Effectively, what you've seen is that indeed in Spain, wholesale market prices have gone down compared to the rest of Europe, whereas before they were among the highest. And so in that sense, it's been successful. It comes, of course, with again, important unintended consequences, if you want, although they were predicted, which is, first, there's a high cost, and there's still a difference between what the power generators get under the cap and their actual costs from buying gas on the international market. And so that differential, that gap needs to be covered. And in Spain, that's through payments from the TSO that then the transmission system operator that then recovers that cost from the consumers as a levy. And so that cost, of course, doesn't disappear. Matters are a bit more complicated still in Spain because there's different types of consumers under regulated and competitive tariffs. And so the additional cost also impacts those different consumer types differently, which is its own form of distortion, if you want. Okay. So there's that. But importantly, also what we've seen is that since the introduction of the measure in Spain and Portugal in June of this year, the gas use for power generation has doubled compared to last year, which is logical. That was perfectly predicted. If you lower the price of something for those that want to buy it, it's going to become more attractive. So they're going to want more of it. And indeed, we've seen more gas generation, importantly, more gas generation than before in Spain. And that's, of course, again, opposite of what we want. We want to use as little gas as possible because there's scarcity. And ironically, Spain is now importing more Russian gas than it was before. So that's, of course, not what we want. And there's, even though they got the whole exception because there's a very weak connection between the Iberian markets and the rest of Europe, and there's the interconnection both on the gas and on the electricity side is very there's not a lot of capacity on there because of the Pyrenees, and so even with that small interconnection, they're exporting as much power as they can to France at the moment, which is where some of the additional gas generation is coming from in Spain. France, which is of course faced with gigantic problems because of the nuclear power fleet that is out of service for more than half of its capacity, and so France is buying everywhere that they can. Hopefully, that is going to be resolved soon by EDF, but it's of course not an easy task, and it's probably, as the DG Energy, the European Commission also points out, it's one of the major factors in the price crisis at the moment, in addition to the Russian invasion to Ukraine.
That's an interesting dynamic in that the cost of electricity essentially being supported by consumers or whoever it's been levied on in Spain, and that's been sold to France. So they're subsidizing French electricity in a way, which is an interesting dynamic. Maybe before we move on, so the whole issue in France, I wonder, have you any more information on that? That could be interesting to go through.
So yeah, as you know, France is the most nuclear dependent country in Europe. And at the end of last year, 2021, the trouble kind of started. The first factor that led to a lower output than usual was the delays that they ran into in their operation, in their maintenance schedules for the nuclear power plants, which was due to COVID leading to absences or not enough availability of maintenance crews, and that was actually having an important impact. But then on top of that, they discovered in the winter of in the past winter, they discovered that there was corrosion in some of the types of nuclear power plants, which was, of course, problematic and now needs to be checked in all the nuclear power plants of the same type.
Right.
And then that was, I think, the most important issue, which they're still recovering from. And then the third factor, to make matters even worse, was the heat wave and drought this summer, which led to some nuclear power plants having to turn down production because they couldn't cool their turbines enough because the rivers were too hot. So that's of course not specific to France, but it did also affect them. And I think EDF is now projecting that they might actually get back to full operation this winter, so this coming winter, which is a dramatic acceleration of what they said before. So I think there's some skepticism of how true that is, but or how realistic that is. But it is having a very big impact, of course, because France is a very big economy, very well interconnected, and is usually in the summer exporting electricity, and now it was importing electricity. So, which led again to more gas use because power had to be generated.
So I was aware of the heat wave effects, but not those other effects. It's actually quite interesting. Okay, so we've discussed the many different interventions, so and maybe the pros and cons. And I suppose there's a few, common deficiencies with many of them. You and colleagues have put together maybe another type of intervention to add to this, and maybe you could take us through and why perhaps it might be effective in alleviating perhaps some of the negatives associated with the high prices, but perhaps minimizing impacts on the market's operation.
Yeah, so we developed what we called a shock absorber, which is kind of inspired by similar mechanisms that exist in the stock exchange, and where if the market kind of gets out of control, quote unquote, that there's a short-term intervention to let the markets cool down and go back to their normal operation. So what our shock absorber does is build in an automatic trigger. And the fact that it's automatic is really important. It can become a feature of the current market design that lies dormant until it's needed. And then also, again, automatically is deactivated once it's not needed anymore, so that it's kind of shielded from political intervention, let's say. It's not a political decision to activate or deactivate it. So it's an automatic mechanism that avoids windfall profits to be generated in the first place. So it's not kind of ex ante instead of ex post. You don't have to go and recover windfall profits. You avoid that they get generated. So the trigger is that you monitor how much inframarginal rents, so profits, generators at the beginning of the merit order are making. So the kind of low cost generators, nuclears, wind, solar, hydro. and when you see that they've in a given year have made a multiple of what they would normally expect to gain in a year or in any period, you install then the second bit of the mechanism, which is a cap on the wholesale market prices for anything but gas generators. And you set that cap at the, well, you can set it at a predetermined level, or you can say that you set it at the level of the most expensive non-gas generator. The big advantage of this is that you don't touch the merit order. So there's still, it's still based on marginal pricing. It's still leaving the merit order and dispatch as it was before. But you lower the wholesale market prices dramatically. And then the final bit is, of course, gas, which you also cap, but you allow for compensation for gas generators if and only if they can prove or it can be demonstrated that they have run out of necessity, that they had to run to keep the system in balance. That's something for the TSO, for the transmission system operator, to check. And so if they indeed were running because they had to, then they get their cost back, the TSO pays for that and recovers that from consumers. So the end effect is that you limit the use of gas to the minimum that is needed, but truth be told, that's probably going to be pretty close to what it is today, because everybody is now also doing what they can to avoid gas from running. But you avoid that then translates into high electricity prices for everybody. So we believe there's a lot to be said for that. We do get positive feedback on that proposal. It also made it into a list of actions considered by the Czech European presidency for the discussion this week. But of course, it's not ideal. It does lower electricity prices, so it does impact the efficiency signal. It will need to be installed, so it's something that will take some time to be operational. So this winter might be tight. Next winter might be feasible, there's we think it's more elegant because it doesn't touch the market fundamentals. I mean, to talk a little bit about the advantages of the revenue cap in the kind of European Commission proposal, which is now also kind of talked about positively by Germany. The advantage there is that you don't interfere with the merit order at all. You also leave the price level at the level that it was, which is good for efficiency and demand side flexibility. I think those are the two things that you have to kind of weigh against each other. The downside of the revenue cap is that you have to make sure that the revenue that you raise also reaches the people that need it, which is a very big challenge. And you also face many legal and other market issues and barriers. Which is why we think it's difficult to implement. But we need to be aware of the reasons why people actually do look at it positively. On our proposal, on the other hand, avoids some of the downsides that the revenue cap has. But it does come with the complexity of having to deal with that residual gas generation and making sure that is still done in a cost-efficient way. I think there's also a bit of a risk that, a political risk, that we get all made enthusiastic about changes to the electricity market design and get lulled into thinking that the issues are being tackled, but then in reality it's going to take many months or years to actually implement and actually be too late to resolve the crisis that we're in this winter and next winter.
Yeah, no, it's a very fair point. When I think of like the whole crisis we're in, like I see it in three parts. The first part is like just dealing with the additional cost. How should we distribute that cost across society? And that includes maybe welfare adjustments to welfare, that sort of thing. And then these sort of interventions, maybe when it comes to maybe shielding or alleviating the price shock. But then the medium term, maybe try and replace gas, get enough gas, such as LNG and the like. And then in the longer term is get off gas and move towards renewables, I suppose, is the obvious one. But just maybe last thing just to finish up on, from your perspective, like you probably know are a bit more familiar with international fuel markets and things like that, and getting, do you have any insight into in terms of getting enough LNG given the recent announcements when it comes to, you know, Nord Stream and things like that? Do you think we're in a good position, or how does it look from your perspective?
It seems that we're obviously faced with tough competition from Asian markets, that are also looking for all the gas that they can get and offering high prices, while at the same time potential suppliers like the US are having a tough time getting the gas liquefied and out of the US to Europe or other markets. Mm. For all kinds of reasons, including that some in the US actually don't want to export because they want to enjoy lower gas prices in the US, which has been a dynamic for a long time, well ahead of this crisis. So it's not that easy to diversify supplies. Germany, the European Commission has visited Canada. There's now Iran that apparently is offering itself as a savior for the gas market, which of course definitely not the kind of supplier that we want to make ourselves dependent on. But even some of the other suppliers in the Middle East that are now being courted are presenting geopolitical risks themselves. And then there's the issue of import infrastructure in Europe. That it's slow to build an LNG terminal. There's floating LNG regasification vessels that many countries, including Germany, have contracted for, but there's only so many around. It seems like even though we European countries are doing what they can, it just comes back to us and we are faced with the inevitability of having to reduce gas use and switching to renewables and efficiency and demand side flexibility.
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect. Okay. Well, thanks a million for your time, Bram. I really appreciate it. And sure, look, we'll be in touch, I suppose.
Yeah, very nice meeting you, Neil.
Nice to meet you. All the best. Bye-bye.